chapter 139, and I'm not sure all of what David was feeling, what he was sensing, or even when exactly he wrote this psalm, but it's something I know that if you're a Christian today, you've experienced. It's this sense of the presence of God in your life. You know, my spiritual journey, as Brian was saying, it really began here in London about 30 years ago. I got a one-way ticket from Boston and flew to Gatwick Airport. And I had just finished my studies at Boston College, and I graduated with a degree in finance and computer science and the School of Business. And yet, you know, when you finish school, before you kind of commit to your career, yep, you want to go kind of live your life a yep little bit before you kind of get into it all. And so I got some money for graduation, and I decided to go live the prodigal life, the prodigal son life. And so I got a one-way ticket here, and I arrived in London, and it was really kind of the beginning of a spiritual journey for me. I'm not sure that's what I was signing up for, but it's definitely what I started to feel. And I know many of us, the reason why we came to God initially is because somewhere in us there was a sense of longing, a sense of lacking in our lives, that we just didn't find purpose in what we were doing. Right. And I know that's where I was. And so I traveled throughout the UK and was in Ireland and picked up this little book called The Prophet. And I read this book, and the story was about a man who entered a city and he changed it by his words and his life. And so that intrigued me a little bit, because something in me, I wanted my life to matter. I wanted it to matter. And yeah, I was 22 years old. I wasn't sure what that meant. And I continued to travel and continued to mess around and mess up and to do all that you do at 22 years old. And I made my way through about 13 or 14 different countries. And I arrived in Amsterdam. If you know anything about the city of Amsterdam, you know, there's a lot of people looking for love in all the wrong places. And I was one of them there in that city. And I arrived in Amsterdam. It was about midnight. And I went out to the red light district and eventually came back to my hotel and was kind of struck by this woman that was there who was serving coffee. And she was maybe 25 years old. She was a little different in the sense of her joy level. And I said, what is it that makes you different? And she said, well, it's my relationship with God.
Wow. Yeah.
And I went, okay. That's a little weird, but appreciate that. Appreciate you sharing. And she shared a little bit about what was going on in her life. And she encouraged me to read the Bible, which I had never done before. And Dad was Catholic. Mom was Protestant. I was a little confused, but never inspired to read the Bible. And so at 22 years old in Amsterdam, in a pretty dark place in my life, but even in a pretty dark city, I opened up the Bible for the first time, and I read the Gospel of John, because that's my name. And I just kind of thumbed through the pages of the Bible, stumbled on John. I read John. I read the entire book that night between 2 and 4 in the morning, and came to faith in Jesus. And there was something overwhelming that I sensed just reading that Gospel for the first time. It was a sense that God had been with me all along. And it was a sense, as you read the life of Jesus, you get the picture that God is with us, that God came here, He came near. And that struck me, and that thought changed my life. That idea, that concept, it revolutionized my thinking. And I'm not sure all where you're at, but that's what I want to talk about for a few minutes here tonight. Just talk about the presence of God. And here in Psalm 139, one of the most beautiful poems, psalms, I don't know where all David was at when he wrote this, but he says this in verse 1. He says, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me." You know, I don't know what your picture of God is, but I always thought God was kind of a force, impersonal, and way distant. And yet David, he's going to kind of clue us into his idea of God. He says, you know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. You know, when I look back, you start to connect the dots and how God really did set times and places for me to kind of stumble on his presence and the reality of God in my life. And it's powerful, and that's kind of what David is cluing us into right here in his own relationship with God. But here in verse 7, he talks about the presence of God. He says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea. That's what Brian and Lauren did right here. Even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. And it's just a beautiful picture, I think, of God with us, God's presence. And for a few minutes, I want to look at the life of Elisha, not to be confused with the Old Testament rock star Elijah. Elijah was one of the major prophets. He wrote his ministry was extremely powerful. Right. And yet Elisha followed him and was really trained by him. And I want to look at his life for a few minutes. You know, I've been around the campus ministry for a good bit. You know, we first went into the ministry in Boston in 1987. And we worked with students at Harvard and MIT. And that was a fun time. And then we moved to Paris in 88. And basically, we built a campus ministry from scratch in 1988. And we saw several hundred campus students. It was really an amazing ministry, campus ministry in the city of Paris, where we saw several hundred campus students become Christians. And then when we started the church in Belgium, we saw I think about 100 students became a Christian in the first 3 years that we were there. And it was exciting to see. And, of course, I've raised several kids of my own who are in campus ministries, who have gone through campus ministry. So I've been around campus ministry a good bit. I don't know if I'm qualified to speak to you today, but I at least want to communicate some thoughts, I hope, that can help you in your personal lives, your spiritual lives. And so we get to Elisha. So we get to Elisha. Of course, you can't talk about Elisha without first talking about Elijah, the man that influenced him and changed his life. And have you ever been through a downtime spiritually? I mean, we heard the good news tonight, and it's awesome to hear great news. Yeah. Right. In fact, one of the reasons why we come together on a Wednesday night is to be lifted, to be encouraged, to be inspired, and we need it because life kicks the snot out of us. Honestly, personally, emotionally, spiritually speaking, I mean, as high as highs can be, the lows can come quick in the matter of, you know, just a bad day. And that's life, right? Yeah. And we need one another. And that's why we're here. That's one of the purposes of being together, to be lifted. But Elijah was having a rough day.
Right.
And we read right here, it says he went into a cave and spent the night. I'm not sure if you're at a point, verse 9, chapter 19. Of 1 Kings. Chapter 19 of 1 Kings. Elijah went into a cave and spent the night, and all of a sudden the Lord spoke to him, "Why are you here, Elijah?" He answered, "I've been absolutely loyal to the Lord, the sovereign God. Even though the Israelites have abandoned the agreement they made with you, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, I alone am left, and now they want to take my life." And the Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. Look, the Lord is ready to pass by." You know, one of the feelings that drove me to God was feeling alone. And in my travel around Europe at that time, I traveled alone for 5 months. And boy, there's something that happens to your internal chemistry when you're alone. It causes you to dig deep and to search for God and to search for meaning and purpose. And Elijah was there. And God, you know, God is such an awesomely personal God. He wants to meet us where we're at. He wants to reveal himself to us. And so right here we see that the Lord is going to pass by and persuade him again of his presence. And I don't know what you might be thinking, that something awesome is going to happen to persuade Elijah that God's present in his life. But that's not what's going to happen. I mean, here's some awesome things that happen. But that's not what was going to persuade him of the presence of God in his life. And chapter 19, verse 11b says, a very powerful wind went before the Lord, digging into the mountain and causing landslides, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the windstorm, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was a soft whisper. When Elijah heard it, he covered his face with his robe and went out and stood at the entrance to the cave. I love that. Such a beautiful picture of God. That God doesn't really need to impress us. All we just need is a soft whisper. And sometimes we hear it as we're on our bed, reading our Bible, or as we're considering who God is and where He's at, or as we start to personally maybe connect some of the dots that God has been moving. And it just dawns on us that God has been with us. And it's powerful. We don't need earthquakes. We don't need fire. We don't need landslides. We just need that soft whisper that we get, I believe, as we meditate and consider God. And as God who knows us and created us, He speaks to us and He persuades us of His presence in our life. Isn't that really what we need? I mean, for Christians tonight, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about, is sensing and feeling the purpose of God. Well, if you read on right here, you find that Elijah, he needs some personal encouragement. And he at this down moment. And so God is gonna start to orchestrate some events. And he brings three different men into Elijah's life that he's gonna train and that are gonna serve in roles and functions to continue moving forward with the Israelites, with God's people. And so he does that in the following verses. And one of the men that's going to come on the scene is Elisha. You know, Elisha didn't even know what God had planned for his life. Elisha basically has not had any personal experience with God, according to what we know right here. But it seems that God had been talking behind Elisha's back. And he was right here with Elijah. And so we read in chapter 19, chapter 19 in verse 19. It says, Elisha went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 pairs of oxen. He was near the 12th pair. Elijah passed by him and threw his robe over him. He left the oxen, ran after Elijah and said, please let me kiss my father and mother goodbye. Then I'll follow you. And Elijah said to him, go back indeed. What have I done to you? Elijah went back and took his pair of oxen and slaughtered them. He cooked the meat over a fire that he had by burning the harness and yoke. And he gave the people meat and they ate it. And then he got up and followed Elijah and became his assistant. Well, we find Elisha here. He's plowing in a field. He's working. He's working with his hands. He's doing the hard work, the laboring. And he's called by Elisha at this moment as Elijah passed by. And that was kind of the way a prophet called someone into the ministry of the prophets was to throw his cloak over him, to select him in that way. And so Elisha, he responds right here. And of course, there the beginning of his training starts to come. And I mean, there's a lot of things to be said about this passage, but Elisha decides to leave his fields. And you gotta ask yourself, maybe why? Why was Elisha ready to leave that life behind? And maybe you're too young to have felt it already, or maybe it's just not hit you the way it has a lot of us that have lived a little longer. But you know, there's a time and a place where you start to live this ordinary life. Kind of the life that everybody signs up for. And it's an ordinary life. For a 50-year-old, you know, the ordinary life is more. We want more. We want, you know, we want more things. More money. More house. More space. We want more. And so people, their quest in this pursuit of the ordinary life is typically it's more. I mean, have you seen that? Maybe your parents are living that life. I mean, a lot of us, we bought into that life, the life of more. And yet something in Elisha, and I don't know what it was like to be walking behind two oxen behinds for years and years and years. But the mundane and ordinary and not real pretty existence he was living. Walking behind, oxen behinds, day after day. You get up in the morning, you have a little breakfast, you go out to the field, you walk behind, oxen behinds, you have lunch, you go back from lunch, there's the oxen behinds, and you continue on your day, and you go to sleep, and you get up the next day, and you walk. And if you've had a job in the secular world without purpose and without Jesus, it feels a little bit like walking behind oxen behind. And it starts to wear on you. It starts to grate you. You start to go, is this it?
Come on.
Is this all I get? You know, I studied the Bible with a guy, Patrick, a few weeks back. And he's 37 years old and he's been at it for a while. And we sat down, and he was very close to making a decision to kind of leave the ordinary life behind. And I said, what are you feeling, Patrick? And he said, you know, honestly, the overwhelming feeling I have today is I just want my life to matter. You know, I think that's probably what the catalyst was for Elisha right here. He wanted his life to matter. Yeah. And sure, there's value in hard work and earning an honest living. But spiritually speaking, there was more.
Right.
And, you know, here's the thing. When God makes his presence known in our lives, we're ready. We're willing to leave that ordinary life behind.
Right.
You know, I've had to do that several times. I had to do it initially when I became a Christian. Kind of leave the ordinary life behind. And I don't know what you would say the ordinary life for a student is, or for a single. But I dare say the ordinary life is more life focused on self.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the ordinary life, that it's all really about me. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's about me. Have you seen the Kevin Bacon commercials? I'm the center of the universe.
Yeah.
I love those commercials. I'm the center of the... Kevin Bacon, I'm the center of the universe. Well, most of us, that is the ordinary life. Because we are the center of the universe. Let's face it. It's all about me. And all that goes with that. The self-indulgence and the self-gratifying. But it's just a self-centered existence. That's the ordinary life.
Yeah.
And yet when you feel and sense the presence of God, it calls you out of that life. Calls you to a life that's more Christ-centered.
Right.
That's God-centered. That's purposeful. That has meaning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where every day our life can matter.
Yeah.
I want to encourage you to, if you're not a Christian today, to consider leaving that ordinary life behind. You know, we don't have Elijah that calls us. We have Jesus himself who calls us.
Yes.
You know, if you look at the beginning of any of the Gospels, Jesus calls men to follow him. I mean, he calls them out of that ordinary existence. He says, come on. Come and follow me. Come into my presence, and I'm going to make you a fisher of men. I'm going to make your life matter.
Yeah.
I know that's why most of us are here. Because Jesus called us out of that ordinary life into an extraordinary life.
Yeah.
And it is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here to tell you, go ahead. Put God to the test.
Come on.
Try him. Try it. Try it for 1 year. Try giving yourself completely over to God.
Yep.
And to leaving that ordinary life and having a Christ-centered life and obeying God's purpose for your life Try that for a year and tell me if it doesn't blow away that self-centered life. It will. I mean, God knows us. He knows us intimately. He made us. He knows what makes us tick. So I want to encourage you to leave the ordinary life behind. So a few years pass by. And as I close right here, Elisha, he's been trained by Elijah. And we find a situation in his life. And I think it's just a great picture of, you know, when we, again, experience the presence of God. Secondly, we see greater things before us. When you experience the presence of God, not only do you leave a lesser life behind, but you see a greater life ahead. And in 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 8, the context, if you know a little bit the historical context right here, the king of Aram is frustrated because he's wanting to attack and decimate the Israelites. And so what happens is Elisha, he's a prophet for Israel. And what Elisha will do is he'll let the king of Israel know where the troops are moving. And so he gives insight into their enemies. And so they escape every time the enemy that comes to fight against them. And what, of course, the king of Aram decides to do, he finds out that this prophet Elijah, he's the one given the inside information because of his connection with God. And so he sends an army to capture Elisha. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
And it says in chapter 6, verse 14, it says that the king of Aram, he sent horses and chariots there along with a good-sized army. They arrived during the night and surrounded the city. So you get a little picture of the context right here. There's a lot of people out in this area tonight. But you just imagine this vast army surrounding. And so it's surrounding them, and they surround the city at night. And then one of Elisha's servants, his attendants, he gets up early in the morning, and what does he see? Verse 15, the prophet's attendant got up early in the morning. When he went outside, there was an army surrounding the city along with horses and chariots. He said to Elijah, "Oh no, my master, what will we do?" He replied, "Don't be afraid, for our side outnumbers them." I'm going to stop right there. Is he out of his mind? I mean, let's do the math. You got Elisha's servant, and you got Elisha. That's two. And he looks out over this vast army and he says, "Hey, don't worry about it, man. We got him outnumbered." Well, let's read on. It says, Elisha prayed, "O Lord, open his eyes so he can see." The Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw that the hill was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As they approached him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike these people with blindness." And the Lord struck them with blindness as Elijah requested. Then Elijah said to them, "This is not the right road or city. Follow me and I'll lead you to the man you're looking for." And he led them off to Samaria. And he leads them away and leads them to the king. And basically they have a great feast for them. And they send them on their way, never to be bothered by them again. And it was kind of a cool victory. But do you see the point right here? You see, when you know God and you're experiencing His presence, you see greater things ahead of you.
Right.
And Elijah, he had a way of seeing life like nobody else did around him. He saw things that people didn't see.
Yeah.
I mean, spiritually speaking, he knew God was present.
Right.
For the servant, the attendant, he looked down and he goes, "Oh no! We're surrounded." I mean, his view was, "We're surrounded. So I'm overwhelmed. This is terrible.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. How will we survive?" You know, a lot of us, we spend most of our days overwhelmed and overrun by the latest crisis.
Yeah.
And we move from crisis to crisis, from "Oh Lord" moment after "Oh Lord" moment, because we don't see that God is present in our lives.
Yeah.
And that God is working. And He's moving. In fact, He's surrounding those who are surrounding you.
Right.
They're surrounded. You have nothing to worry about. 366 times in the Bible says, do not be afraid.
Yeah.
But we spend, if you're like me, most of our day, most of our lives in fear of the next great disaster.
Right.
And I just want to encourage you. You know, when you experience the presence of God, when you get in the Bible and you start to pray to God honestly and you hear that soft whisper and you experience it, are persuaded again of the presence of God.
Yeah.
I mean, you see greater things ahead.
Come on.
I mean, you look at life differently. Challenges are really opportunities to grow. Obstacles are tremendous possibilities with God. Are you with me right there?
Yeah.
And, you know, I really believe greater things are ahead.
Yeah.
You know, I look at and I know I'm only 50.
That's right.
I'm only 50. And I've been around a long time. I've been in the kingdom a long time, almost 30 years. And I've seen, you know, the comings and goings of the churches. But I really believe that our greatest days are ahead of us.
Yep.
I mean, there's so much to be encouraged about.
Right.
I mean, we just spent the last 7 years in youth and family ministry in the Boston church. And what that means, if you're not real familiar with the church, is, I mean, there's a lot of young people that have grown up in the church. But, of course, they need to discover God and His presence in their lives, too. And you know, there was a time when not many were really attracted and wanting to become Christians, even from within our own membership in the church. And that was concerning. And, of course, as my kids got of age, they were 14, 12, and 10, and it wasn't like there was a great track record of the children of our members becoming Christians. And I got alarmed, and I know Carol, we got alarmed, and we said, we got to get invested. We got to give our hearts and work with the young people in the church. And so for the last 7 years, in Boston Church, about 2,000 members. And we had about 100 teenagers in our ministry. And throughout that time, and it was one of the most rewarding things we've ever done, is to spend these 7 years working with young people and helping them discover God and grow. And, you know, after 7 years, we saw 70 teenagers baptized into Christ. I don't know about you, but, I mean, that's like, I don't know how many we are here tonight, maybe twice the size of this room right here, but about 70 young people become Christians. And I mean, I've studied the Bible with a lot of people. I don't know if I've ever made the quality of young disciple as I've seen over the last 7 years. I mean, the hearts of these young people is just amazing, fantastic to see. I have a tremendous amount of confidence in you, in your generation, in your desire to please God. I mean, the campus ministries around the world I want you to be encouraged. You're not just a small group of students here alone in London.
Right.
I mean, there's campus ministries all over the world.
Yeah.
That they're impressive young men and women that are zealous for God, that are devoted to God, that are giving their lives and have left ordinary behind, and they're seeing great things done. I mean, in Boston, we just had a campus retreat, and there were 550 students at our campus retreat in Boston. And the week following, there were seven students that became Christians in the week that were baptized into Christ. And it's just so cool. And even to see my own kids kind of in that mix. My son Timothy studied the Bible with one of the BC football players, and he became a Christian last week. And my nephew, Nick, he studied the Bible with one of his classmates as a freshman, and he became a Christian last week. And it's just so cool. I mean, they'll do greater things than I've ever even imagined doing.
Right.
because they've experienced the presence of God. And I just want you to dream big, to know that God, if God is with you, you know, who could be, who cares who's against you?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're two, but, you know, you got them outnumbered.
Yeah.
We may be two, but we have them outnumbered. And so as you turn the city of London upside down, I want to remind you that you are not alone. That God is, He's here, He's near. He's not only with you, if you're a Christian today, He's in you. Right. Ephesians chapter 1 says that, you know, that He prayed that God would enlighten us to know of His presence in us. In Ephesians chapter 3, He prayed that we would understand the power we have in our inner being,
right,
because of the Spirit of God, that He caused it dwell within us. And if God's present in our lives, we'll be ready and willing to leave the ordinary life behind and see greater things ahead. Amen. Been great to be with you tonight. Have a great night.
Come on.